Hello and welcome to the Blues Guitar Show podcast with me, Ben Martin, from thebluesguitarshow.com. I hope everyone is having a great week this week. Today I'm chatting to David and the Devil, one of my favourite artists I've discovered over the last kind of 5 or 6 years. I've been trying to set this up with David for a little while, so I really appreciate him coming on and giving me some of his time. I've always been a really big fan of David's music, right from the early days of Charlie Hicks through to his latest blues chart number one with My Little Frog. He's a really great guy, talks super candidly about the difficulties that he's faced as an artist, the difficulties he's faced as a musician. He's a really humble guy, fantastic guitarist, so I really enjoyed this and I'm looking forward already to having David back on for a second one. So without further ado, enjoy my episode, my chat with David and the Devil. All right, so I'm on with David and the Devil. Thanks so much for coming on, man. How you doing?
Good, man. Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, man. I'm good. I've been wanting to speak to you for ages because I'm a huge fan of your music. I think.
Oh, thank you.
I was trying to remember the first time that I heard of your stuff, and I think it might have been. Did you ever listen to the Acoustic Tuesday show, Tony
yes.
Policastro?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he mentioned. Your King of the Swamp record in one of those.
I think he mentioned Charlie Hicks at one point. Like when I disappeared, I just remember a friend sending me and going, "Hey, this guy's talking about you." And I thought like, "Oh, too late." Sadly,
that must be nuts.
Yeah. No, it's wild. I know he's a good friend of Matt, but and also he's a Chicago Blackhawks fan, and I'm a Penguins fan, so I know it'll probably be the last time he mentions me now that he knows that, sadly. So, but yeah, no, he seems such a cool dude, and I'm like, it blew my mind to see somebody talking about me that's like an actual legit musician in that world.
I think he stopped doing it now, but it was awesome when he did it.
The
Charlie Hicks thing, so people may not know that are listening to this, but talk through the kind of what happened, like Charlie Hicks then. What happened like to that?
I feel like I've been anticipating this whole thing for the last few days. I don't know. Obviously, you know, to cut a very long story short, I'm now in a position where this is the first time in my life that I'm not working full time, like in the motor trade, which I have done since I was 18. And I'm now disabled. And I now know that I've had my whole life and now have a future with a muscle wasting disease, which is Becker muscular dystrophy. So obviously I've had it my whole life, and there has been signs, and there's a whole hour that I could probably go on about that. But, you know, I think what was happening at that time is I started a job like doing night shifts. I'd done them in the past, but I was doing night shifts at home, doing like truck breakdowns and things like that. To be really honest, I feel like I lost my mind completely. Like I was not in a good place. I've had a real battle with my mental health for a long, long time. And yeah, I think a couple of negative comments that I saw one night, just stupidly decided to Google myself, found some forum, just read it. And it wasn't like, I know some people felt that I couldn't take criticism, but it was kind of, I never wanted to be on stage. I never thought that would happen to me. I only really started singing like 12 years ago from now. It was a very short window. And then I was up here and it all came a bit too quick, and I didn't anticipate those sort of things. And I wasn't ready for it. I think I was just always someone that wants to please everybody. So I just had a good run where everything was just positive. So, you know, it was just until I saw that. And it wasn't just that, you know, that was like a part of it that just unfortunately came at the right time where I wasn't doing too good with, you know, lack of sleep. And I've moved around like all over the country, like, you know, every 6 months since I was 18. So I've had that to deal with, getting to know new people. These jobs aren't, you know, they're very stressful, and it's 12 hours all night. You know, you can't sleep, and you've got someone yelling at you constantly. So you're trying to solve problems, do all of that. And, you know, now I know I was also suffering with something that was the worst job to do for somebody with this condition.
Yeah.
But I didn't know I had it. So, you know,
Is it a kind of relief knowing that's what it is?
It is now, but that first, I got a phone call. You'd kind of think that you would probably do it a bit better, but I just had a phone call saying, hey, you know, we figured out what your back pain is or what you've been struggling with. You know, I was working in a garage in Glasgow just recently, and I went to carry something upstairs and took a step and just nothing happened. And I just sort of couldn't understand. I was like, oh, well, you know, sometimes I've felt a bit weak, but this is I can't actually. And then even if I wasn't carrying something, I couldn't go up the staircase. Mm. And, you know, straight away, the people that I was working with were like, you need to get this sorted. You can't just let us do all the work. So, you know, it started a year and a half worth of testing. And then, I had a phone call in July last year at 34 years old just to tell me, hey, guess what? You do have something wrong with you. And I, you know, in some way I kind of thought I had something wrong with me for a long time because, I really struggled with PE at high school, you know, physical education. But it was a good time at that moment because I just found guitar, and I found out that if I hung out in the music rooms, the guitar teacher kind of liked me and kind of liked the stuff that I brought. So he vouched for me when teachers were like, what's he still doing here? He'd be like, oh, he's got a lesson soon. I didn't. He just knew, you know, quickly I was skiving that he's cutting class or something.
Yeah, that's great, man. Has it affected guitar playing stuff at all?
Oh yeah, big time. And that's
really, how so?
I think that's the thing that I've slowly, it's dawned on me. As you say, that, you know, is it good to know what it is? Yes, now it's great to give the problems I had a name. Because to me, from the life that I had before, I grew up in the army. I was born in Germany. My dad was a staff sergeant in the Royal Electrical Mechanical Engineers. So had a strange upbringing.
Yeah, so that's Germany. why the lack of Scottish accent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the lack of Yorkshire accent as well.
Yeah.
I can go into it, but I've just got this weird, accent in the middle that no one can ever tell where I'm from, because I was taught by teachers in Germany from all over the UK and had no concept of accents and things. You know, I moved over here when I was about 12, I think.
So were you international school in Germany?
Yeah, no, it was a British army camp. So it was a British school. When you got to secondary school, then you went to a German school, but I left obviously before that. But I've got an older sister who went, and my mum is German.
Right.
But I don't speak it. So again, there's this communication problem in that sense. So I just had a weird childhood. And when I found music, when I came to the UK, it was a godsend. And I think subtly, because when I first started, you know, it was early 2000s, I just wanted to be the fastest guitarist. I want to be the next Paul Gilbert and Joe Satriani. And I, for some brief moment, I could do that for a bit. But I think, you know, in the last sort of 12 years, I realized that I couldn't quite keep up, or things were slowing down. And obviously, I didn't know what that was. I just thought, I'm not practicing, or I'm not doing this, or I'm not eating something. And I think that's why subconsciously I sort of started using a slide, because I felt that doing bar chords really hurt my hands.
Oh, that's super interesting. So is that when you went into open tunings at that same time?
Yeah, pretty much. About that time, there was sort of that happening. I started a job doing night shifts again at that point. And then I just sort of heard John Butler. He was the big, playing an open C, 12 string, used a slide sometimes. But also there was all these weird chords that looked a lot simpler than, you know, your standard bar chord, which really hurt my hands ever since I started playing guitar. And I just thought, oh, everyone must go through that. That's why it's impressive that people can play bar chords. And now I realize that, no, after a certain point, it doesn't hurt and it shouldn't hurt. But now when, you know, I've done covers of songs and I'm holding a bar chord, by the end of it, I can barely feel my hand. So
really?
Yeah. Wow. So it's, and the sort of the speed and things like that, and also standing up and singing the way that I've done, or yelling, really was a struggle. So there was this journey where I started doing this thing, and I was in the Leeds City Stompers for a little bit as well. So we used to load into weddings and things, and I just started realizing that something wasn't right. Like, it just, yeah, really wasn't feeling good. I didn't feel strong. And then I kept thinking, well, if I keep doing it, and I was working, you know, I was always working in a garage while doing all those things. So I'd be there all day, then, you know, lug all my stuff in the car, go to a wedding and things, and just slowly started to realize that, oh, you know, if I carry this amp and I'm not holding on to the, like, the banister or something, I just can't get up. And I would be stood up playing and just feel completely knackered at the end of it. And now I realized that, you know, slowly my body was trying to give me signs. But for all of my life, I was told, you're fit and healthy, there's nothing wrong with you. So I just thought, it's your fault. You're either crap at this, or, you know, you've got this. And so, yeah, it was.
So it's interesting, though, that that had such a effect on the sort of music you played. Because it's almost like that helped you in some ways find your kind of voice.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Because for years I listened to heavy metal and thought, you know, that's the route you're going to go. You know, all of this stuff about metal, playing all these low tunings. And eventually I just stopped playing for a few years because I moved out of my house, got a job, and just kept my head down. And then slowly but surely had this job where I could bring my guitar to work in between these breakdowns and just noodle.
In the truck?
No. I was like, at the first place, it was like an office block that was on this little island in West Yorkshire. So I'd just go there and just be in this thing, and my friends would come round sometimes. So it was a really nice atmosphere because people would come, they would play some things, and just learning from all of them. So it was really good to have that amount of time. And I think that's why I sort of just absorbed so much, because I was just on YouTube all night looking up everything, you know, blues and, you know, shred stuff, heavy metal things, just trying to learn things, everything I could.
I'm just interrupting this episode to let you know about the Blues Guitar Show Plus membership. Plus members get access to weekly lessons each Friday, complete with tabs and downloads. For just $5 a month, you'll get instant access to nearly a year's worth of guitar lessons covering finger picking, fretboard theory, soloing, improvising, slide, and much, much more. If you're tired of bouncing around on YouTube trying to pick up bits of information from here and from there, and you find it hard to commit to regular lessons, this is for you. Details of how to join are in the description below. Now back to the episode. That's really cool. It's a bit like so this is kind of a chicken and egg question maybe, but like to me, I would listen to the stuff that you did with KK Hammond, and it was almost like, you know, when they have like this series of the evolution of man, right? This is ridiculous kind of analogy I'm going for here, but like almost like the link between Charlie Patton and Soundgarden, that's kind of where that's where some of your stuff fit for me. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. But was it that you got more interested in that kind of music because of the way you were playing, because of the way it was feeling? Or was it that you were really interested in that kind of music, so you started to kind of play that way?
I think to be truthful, it's probably a bit of both. I think the Charlie Patton thing hit me at a weird time. Again, another weird job. I've had like a really bizarre life with work and things. that company I was talking about that I first got, and it gave me the freedom to sort of practice through the night and also do the job, but there was a lot of time. And then it became that there was a lot of time to practice at night, which I didn't clock that something's probably wrong with the business. And then eventually the owner, who was a friend of mine's dad, said, hey, we're stuffed. You're getting made redundant, or there's a company that's buying you, this company. If you want to keep your job, you have to move to Milton Keynes. And literally within a night, I remember my dad saying to me, like, well, you either take it or you're unemployed in Wakefield. And I just thought, screw it. So I went to Milton Keynes, and that's really when I started my first open mic, when I first actually played in front of people, when I learned songs, when I sang. But basically, part of the job was that they actually had a recovery company. They're I think they're on a TV show as CMG Rescue. It's like Ice Road Truckers in the UK. That's the company I work for. And we'd like be in a control room, have our drivers, but mainly they did like fatal car accidents and things around Northampton, Bedford and things. And what would happen is they would take photos of like the car accidents and then they would upload them and we'd get those photos and put them on a police system because we had a forensic thing. So sometimes it was grim.
Yeah.
And it's like at night and it's a bit spooky. And then I just had a playlist playing and Charlie Patton came up. It just randomly came on. I hadn't heard it before. And it was one of them things where, I mean, it's making...
you'd summoned him. That's what
happened. Yeah, it was like, it's making the hairs on my neck stand up now, just thinking about it, that it was just that eerie sound just came out. And, you know, there was a lot of, everyone that worked there was older, that, you know, I really got on with them because I knew a lot about classic rock because I sort of came from, that's what I listened to when I was a kid. And then that came on and even they were interested, like, oh, what's that? That's like really spooky. And that's really how it sort of the seed planted. And at the time I was like trying to work out, you know, how do I actually play with a slide? Because I'd lived with another family in Milton Keynes. I was trying to find a place to live in Northampton. Crashed my car following an estate agent that was in a Jag that was driving way faster than me. And then I was like, right, I'm living in a caravan in the car park of this company, having to drive 2 hours to Yorkshire every 4 days. Like, I need to figure out what to do. And a driver just went, oh, my daughter's left home. Do you want to come live with us? And it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me at that time. Because I was such a shy kid. I was bullied like crazy at the first two jobs I had, like proper tormented. Because I was just a quiet guy. You know, I didn't draw attention to myself. I didn't get into guitar to be on stage and to do all of that. I just loved playing guitar. And I kind of accepted very early on that I'm just not going to be on stage. I'm not cool enough. You know, I know that there's hundreds of people that I went to school with that if they saw pictures of me, they wouldn't know who I was. They'd be like, yeah, don't know him. Because I flew under the radar. Pretty much most of my life. So
that's interesting, man.
But that family were, you know, Martin and Sam Wilcox, they changed my life like big time because they were so loud and wild that I had to come out of my shell. Like I was in their house. And they really encouraged me when I would, like, cause I brought my guitar down when I moved in. So I wasn't really playing. I just brought it cause I didn't want to, you know, leave loads of crap in my parents' house. But when I would play, they wanted to hear it. They wanted to listen. They wanted to which I never had before. Like as much as, you know, my dad is a big influence in the music that he listened to and letting me listen to all this cool stuff. I don't really come from a family that pushed like, you know, an entertainer or telling you, hey, you could do this. It wasn't really a thing. And again, that comes back to the Charlie Hicks thing that, you know, I don't come from that sort of thing. So when someone tells me, hey, you suck at this, or why did you do this? You know, straight away, I just think, oh, I don't know. Cause you know, I come from an army background. Someone tells me you got to do this. I go do it. I'm not like, make me, you know, I'm just not that kid. So that's sort of how I found Charlie Patton. And again, like I said, just at that time, I was trying to figure out slide. I was playing like trying to figure out, am I going to go the John Butler way? But that was quite tricky and I didn't want to stick like long fingernails on. And again, at that time, sort of really into Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac, like Danny Kirwan and Jeremy Spencer sort of era of doing a million different versions of Dust My Broom. So I was like, if I can nail this lick, I can figure it out. And I remember I had like, you know, like a 20 pound Argos guitar. That was like my first guitar, like a nylon string thing. And I would sit in Martin's house when I wasn't on night shifts, you know, a bit jet lagged because it was just horrible between night shifts.
Yeah.
I remember just one day I figured it out and it was like everything just exploded. You know, I could play Joe Satriani stuff, Steve Vai stuff, all of that. That was easy, but I just couldn't get this thing. And I tried previously and gave up, but it was when like it just happened. And then at the same time, I sort of realized that I'm not really going to make any friends dealing with dead bodies in cars and police officers and truck drivers and old people doing this job. So like, I need to get out there because otherwise how am I going to meet people? Mm. You know? So I just remember just saying to Martin one night, like, don't they do these things called like open mic nights where you just go and you just try something? And we like Googled it. I lived in Newport Pagnell, which is just next to Milton Keynes. And they were like, oh yeah, there's this open mic night. It's like the longest running open mic night in the country. So they say. I just remember going there and, you know, because singing while playing guitar was, I can't do it. So I think I did like Eagle Eye Cherry, Save Tonight, because that's just an easy, you know, four chords. You got the rhythm. Right now you sing, you know, it's like patting your head and rubbing your belly. It's kind of, you could just about do it. And then it was some like reggae songs. I think there is video of me doing that like 12 years ago and it's just dreadful. And then, I think when I sort of got the Elmore James thing down a little bit and they were encouraging me, I remember just one day I just thought, and I'd say that when I was singing the Eagle Eye Cherry and stuff like that, I was singing just generic. It was just...
I was going to say, because you've got quite a unusual voice. Like it's pretty unique and I can't imagine Save Tonight in that voice.
I think
when you kind of discover that,
I think when I got to the chorus, that's where it came out, because I went, well, I can't sing high, so what if I just sing loud? And it somehow and it was just more of a frustration of I can't sing this, but it's coming, so I'm gonna have to figure it out. And I just you know, I remember one time, I think I tried like the same sort of point. I thought, oh, maybe The Seeker by The Who would be a good one. And when it got to the like, I've been searching low and high, just like, instead of going, I went like, just yelled. Like it was
just distorts.
It was just, if I just yell it, I can achieve it. And that was sort of my ethos. And then that's kind of when that moment with Charlie Patton happened, where I thought, oh, I can shout and I can do this thing. And then I think they had a video of me doing Dust My Broom for the first time on like a 12 string. And like the place at the end was chanting like my name. And it was just one of those like, oh man, I did it. I mean, I remember going outside feeling like someone had punched me in the middle of the stomach because I couldn't breathe because I just pushed it too hard. Mm. And it was just a few years of figuring out that sort of thing and how to control it. And I think when I sort of figured that out, I then, you know, I did a few things with musicians in that area and then just one day woke up and I couldn't do that job anymore. And I just went back to Yorkshire. There was a couple of years and I just got my mule as well, which is a cool story because it ties in with, you know, I was going to Sweden like every 4 days because I had a girlfriend in Sweden at the time.
All right.
So I do my 4 night shifts, then go to Stansted Airport, fly to Sweden for like 20 quid because it was peanuts. And then I'd stay in Sweden. Her stepdad had a restaurant and obviously it was like a small Swedish village. So they were like, oh, this English guy is coming. Maybe he could play music at the restaurant. And that was like my first gig, just playing the most generic songs ever. But because I was English, they just lost their minds because they're like, oh,
that's awesome.
It's like the Beatles. And I would, so I just had to come up with like a set list and learn all these like really generic songs, just to sort of cut my teeth and learn, you know, how do you sing and play guitar? But most of it was relatively simple stuff. Like, Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out. Life by the Drop was a good one with Stevie Ray Vaughan. Cause again, I could yell and stuff. And then as I was going back and forth to Sweden, I remember coming back to Milton Keynes and I had the same Ozark that you've got.
Oh, nice.
A little lipstick, cool. Pick up one.
Yeah.
Just because they're cheap. It's good. Yeah. Like there was a little guitar store in Newport Pagnell that were just really kind to me and just let me try all this stuff. And I thought, oh, that'll be a good guitar. And I think I got a sticker of like a moose sign from Sweden, like the airport. And I'd put it on the case and it was like the first beginnings of Instagram, and I took a photo of the guitar case with the Swedish stickers on it, and Matt from Mule just like commented and put, hey, I make resonators, you know. And I kind of just thought, cool, nice pitch, like, you know, I don't have the amount of money that
we require.
And also he was making them in his basement at the time. So I kind of thought, okay, that's
what year would that have been? What kind of time is that?
Oh, that's like 11 years ago now. Like, yeah, probably about
2012, 2013.
March, yeah, 2012, something like that.
Wow, man. Yeah.
And then I think it was 14 months it took, because I just eventually like looked at his stuff and thought, oh yeah, I've got to have one. I'd never played a steel guitar before. I'd never seen one. You know, I knew that like Martin Offler was one of my biggest like childhood influences. So, you know, I saw that guitar and thought, I just got to have one of them.
Yeah.
You know, I'd never played one, never knew what I'm getting into. And I think right at the end, I was really struggling for the money. I was like, oh no, I'm not going to be able to do this. And it was about 14 months and I've got the one here because I have sold this once before, but I bought it back. So this is number 40.
Oh, really?
This is number 42.
Wow. That's amazing. Number 42.
And it's had a hell of a hard life. It's been, yeah, all over the world. Its headstock's been, or the neck's been completely snapped, throwing it at somebody while in the stompers, but I won't talk about that.
Oh, wow.
And then, yeah, it's just, but it's just the best.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
This is the one that just, I just write everything on it. Just, and when it came.
What tuning are you playing in?
It's open D, but it's down to B.
That's what it is.
So it's just a very low version of that.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Nice.
I seem to just.
We talked a little bit about how I played one of your old songs at a couple of gigs, actually.
Don't Rain on Me.
Yeah, Don't Rain on Me. Oh, I love that song. It's a great song, man. But I was playing it in open D, which I find is better for my voice. But I was trying to work out what the tuning was. So I was like, it's not open G. You know, and I think obviously you can work it out in open D. So I'm like, but it's, yeah, it sounded lower.
I think back then it was open D.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Okay. I think either that or. Just down half a step, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it was.
I can't remember again, like, you know, because of so much has happened since then. It's just, it's like a blur now. but, you know, my life is very different now. Like it's kind of, it's been scary, but it's also helped deal with a lot of that stuff. Because, you know, it really affected me, like dumb stuff like that keeps me up at night. You know, I'll just think of some stupid thing I've done and it just, I can't let it go, you know, things that I've said or things people have said. And I'm like, oh yeah, I agree. And then it's just dwindled and just stayed there. But as soon as I found out that, a lot of that stuff's just gone, yeah, I don't really care anymore. It's just not important. Like, I now,
that's a much better way to be.
It's just kind of like, I've just now realized that I'm probably not going to be able to walk in like less than 10 years. So, you know, bigger fish to fry. I'm like, yeah, sorry, I couldn't remember your name, or I was a dick at your wedding. Like, you know, I had a problem, you know. So,
yeah, it puts things into perspective, doesn't it? You know, because I mean, once you find that out, it's like, you know, you've been walking around dealing with something that nobody knew about and that even you didn't know about, I guess, for years. And it's, you know, hard to judge anything in that period of time through a lens of not knowing about it. Cause it's, I mean, it's always a better way to be, like, you know, that, just not worrying too much about that stuff. But especially when you get any, this happens when you get like, you know, bad news or whatever, like anything that puts the rest of things into perspective makes everything else seem so small.
And exactly. I think like in some way I was probably waiting for something like that. And that's where a lot of the Charlie Hicks music came from. Cause I felt that like, this is a bit strange. I've just written a bunch of songs within a few weeks after never doing it, like never trying it, and just about grasping how to put a song together without any chord changes. Cause that seemed the easiest thing to do for me, where it's like, I'm just, there's no chords. I just We stay in open. We just do a melody. We sing the melody. Don't deviate because it's too complicated and you'll still screw it up.
The R.L. Burnside approach. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. And I've come to really embrace that. I feel like I've recently watched like a ton of interviews with Jay Maskus from Dinosaur Jr. And I realized that I've probably got a lot of other undiagnosed problems that I've put onto other things, but I kind of just love his approach. And that is the way that I've been, where I know a lot of dumb stuff about loads of things, but there's some stuff that I just haven't bothered to learn because I just do it this way. This is how I do it. This is how I figured it out. Cool. You know, and now I'm at a better stage where I'm like, yeah, this is what I do. You don't like it. I get it. Like sometimes I don't like it. So, you know,
that is the way to be, like, especially this is kind of, I think, the difference between, you know, being a musician and an artist, I guess. In that, you know, when you're an artist, it is all about doing it your own way. Like great art was ever made by just repeating what other people had done, which is kind of what you tend to do more as a musician.
I think that's what people have sort of said that I've done, but I didn't intend to do that. I literally thought I was like learning this thing and just doing my thing. But when I look back, I mean, even when I listen to that stuff or see videos from back then, I don't recognize the person. I don't recognize the person that did like King of the Swamp. I'm like, who was that guy? How did you do that? Like, how could you put synthesizer with this thing? And like, I don't even know the chord I played on that last song on King of the Swamp. I've still got the track like on my computer and I look at it sometimes. I'm like, I don't know how I got that. I don't know where it came from. And yeah, a lot of it is a little bit like that. So yeah, I've come to just embrace it. But the point you just made about the difference between an artist and a musician, I wish I would have known that when I started, because that would have saved me a hell of a lot of pain and problems. And, you know, no one ever told me that stuff other than maybe stuff that I look back and think, you know, all the DVDs and things that I just rinsed when I was a kid. I remember there was Zakk Wylde on something saying like, you know, you better love the music because sometimes it doesn't love you. And I always loved that quote, but I never took it on board until now. I'm like, oh yeah, there you go. That was like something you liked, you understood it. And yeah. So yeah, I think that is something that I wish I knew earlier. I made some just stupid mistakes, but I feel like there's a humbling thing with the killing off Charlie Hicks that, you know, it allowed me to just restart and rethink things like, and rethink, right, how am I going to do it in a way that works while I'm working? Cause I, you know, up to October last year, I was working full time. And sometimes when I was doing that, it was like, yeah, there's no time to play music or no energy. And that's again, part of this condition, part of just life. So yeah, a lot of lessons learned very quickly, but unfortunately it just missed opportunities. So now I'm in a very different place.
I guess it's a, it's all about, you know, there is obviously, I think every musician goes through a kind of journey. I mean, everyone does, no matter what you do, but I think it's that it's often so often a story of kind of rebirth, as it were. Like for me, moving overseas.
You were in China, weren't you, for a bit?
I was, I was there for 5 years, yeah.
Wow.
But before that, I was doing a lot of touring and I was playing in kind of alternative bands and kind of, yes, there's some bluesy stuff, but like predominantly like playing in the kind of industrial world.
Yeah. Cool.
Playing bass in those bands and stuff and just relentlessly playing around London.
Right.
And kind of a similar story to you, like so much like, you know, having to work, do a full day's work and then, you know, drive up north, do a show, come back down next day, full day work, back up north for, you know, that kind of touring, but you don't get to stay there. You've got to keep coming back to do a job.
Touring the M1.
Exactly.
Like, I get that most people are working, you know, it's not just like if you decide to be a musician, everybody just decides to be a musician and your mum and dad pay for you to like go for it. It's like, I know that isn't the
Wouldn't
case
nice?
For most people. Yeah, exactly. And I'm not like bitter at anyone that lives that life or anything like that. I, you know, there was a couple opportunities. I tried it, but it just never worked. And also the fear of, you know, not it not working out when I've just been paid like every month for my whole life is, it's daunting. And I didn't have anyone sort of take my hand and go, no, it'll be all right. This will be fine. And this is the way it is. You know, it was figure it out, but it was just easier to go, I'll just go and get a job because I'm secure then. And then I can buy loads of guitars and I'll figure it out, you know, and then I'll have a collection.
Yeah. Which I'm sure you do.
Oh yeah.
But I think it kind of comes back a little bit again to this idea of artist versus musician. It's like, so before I moved away, I was very much in bands that were doing original music. It was all about, you know, writing and recording and stuff. And I always knew that I could have been a full-time musician had I just done like weddings every weekend.
Yes.
But I didn't want to do that. Mm. You know, I didn't want to be playing Brown Eyed Girl at someone's wedding that I don't care about every single weekend. So for me, it was like, you know, it was, that didn't, even though that would have been, you know, being a professional musician, if you like, it still wasn't what I was interested in doing.
I was in the same position. Yeah, exactly the same.
Yeah. And then, so for me, it was like, you know, I would rather do something completely unrelated during the day and then do the music stuff that I want to do. And then eventually, you know, it comes around full circle.
You
end up, you know, if you keep chipping away at it, you end up in the place that you're supposed to be, but.
Definitely. Yeah. It's just one of those things that it's just unfortunate sometimes that, you know, certain opportunities failed at the time. You think, ah, damn, I wish that kept going. That could have been something or whatever. Not that like I live in that moment anymore, but I did for a couple years after doing that. I kind of thought, oh, you moron, why did you do that? But again, you know, try and do a night shift in the motor trade, 12 hours a night. I stupidly got a dog, which was a wolf hybrid that could eat like a frozen sheep skull in like 45 seconds. And it was just a nightmare to just, I had to sleep near it and it would just abuse me. And I was tired. Obviously, you know, I was not strong enough to deal with this dog and it got really tough. That was, I was listening to Casper's podcast with you, which was really good. And he was talking about like, oh, and Dave came to live in like St. Albans for 6 months. And I feel sorry for him because like I genuinely was like, I was on the verge of a mental breakdown when he met me. I was just not in a good place because of all of that. I remember like he knocked on my door once just randomly out of the blue. And I'd literally just decided I'm just going to shave my mustache and beard off. And literally had just come downstairs and he knocked on the door and I just felt like, you know, like holding my face like, yeah, I'm all right, mate. How are you? Like just... just was not in a good place. So again, you know, as soon as I just had it in my mind, I was like, what if I just deleted Charlie Hicks? And I just did it. And I was like, cool. And thought, I'll just sell all my guitars. And just, this is my life now. I'm just going to have to do this job. Like if I try and do the music and the job, you know, it just ain't going to happen. And it's too depressing to not do the music. So I'll just do the job. I was struggling on that front and it was just too, you know, easy to just go, oh, well, if I delete that, it'll just go, like the problem will go away. But it then caused like another problem because then there was just tons of people speculating on things. But then I kind of found it funny.
It took me a while to work out that David and the Devil and Charlie Hicks were the same person.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a few people that still message me like, oh, I've just figured out that you're this guy. But no, it was kind of good to just have that time to then rethink, you know, because... you know, I never thought people were going to listen to that EP I did in my flat in Shepherd's Bush. I just, you know, I was just trying to do it quick so my neighbor wouldn't kick down my door again. And just, I was thinking, right, I'll just do this and then let's see. And then to see it do quite well was, yeah, baffling. I remember riding my bike I worked at Volkswagen at Chiswick. I remember getting on my bike and I was just in tears because I was like, this is so weird. I'm riding my bike, which I was terrible at, to be honest. Again, another sign that something wasn't good. I just thought it was because of all the pollution in London. I can't ride fast. So I remember riding my bike to work, just like, how have I got like a number one on iTunes when I'm like, I'm just this random guy that works this crappy job. Like nobody knows me at work. It was just a really surreal day. And then on that day, Matt had... like arranged for this to arrive. So this thing arrived in a box on that day. So this is the gorgeous number 7 Mulecaster, I think it is. It was like a prototype. So there's a few things that obviously are different with them now.
It's got three tremolo arms.
Yeah, it's like an A, a G, and a B bender. But I don't use them because I can't use it. But it looks cool. It just looks like some kind of crazy contraption. But I mean, like,
it looks like Freddy Krueger's hand.
Exactly. But I can't use them. I don't know how to throw them into music. It's, you know, the guy that's the best at doing it is Seth Lee Jones. He is, I mean, he's like one of the coolest players, I would say, that's just so underrated. But what he does with that is just bonkers. And I think that was kind of set up by him, like Matt's sort of help. So like, yeah, if you want to see someone use that thing properly, I mean, I just use that thing to just do silly videos and like, yeah.
That's awesome though.
Sped up so cool. Paul Gilbert things because I can't play it at speed and things like that. So anyway, I'll just move this forward a little bit.
But yeah, like you were talking about that moment on your bike, it's the weirdest thing. Like I remember a similar kind of thing happened to me. I was, it must've been 15 years, no, 10, 15, I don't know, a long time ago now. I was interviewed in Bass Player magazine.
Oh, wow.
And I went into a shop and my car got declined and I didn't have enough money to buy the magazine that I was in. And I just thought, like, isn't this ridiculous?
Yeah, that's terrible, man.
Crazy stuff. So then what happened after you killed off Charlie Hicks? You had a bit of time off. When did it kind of, when did you start doing stuff again? And the idea of David and the Devil, where did that come from?
I think I slowly just started to get on top of like my mental health. Obviously I had to like give the dog back to the person, which was probably like the most heartbreaking thing I've ever done. Again, it's one of those things I still kick myself about, but knowing what I've got now, it was a good idea because I just would have hurt myself. So I was doing the night shift thing for a little bit longer. But it was working from home. So there was a little bit of an aspect that was a little bit better, you know. I'm now doing night shifts, like same sort of job as what I did before, but I'm at home. We moved to like the Scottish borders. Then we moved to Manchester and then COVID happened while we're in Manchester. And we lived in like Salford Keys, so it's, you know, relatively center of the city, but a little bit out there. And I think we just got spooked by like, you know, what's happening here. And because me and my partner like can just move, we just thought like, let's go live like on the outskirts of Stirling, like near the Highlands, because if this continues, that's probably a good place to be. So we like literally got to Manchester for the second time, thought, right, we're here now. I was doing the nights and then just thought, nah, we need to get out of here. And then we had this huge house that had all this space and it had this huge desk for like my work sort of thing. And I think it slowly just started getting my confidence back a little bit, with singing, playing, writing, but also trying to figure out every little bit of Charlie Hicks that I didn't like. Because there was elements, it's not just, you know, I probably should have said this all in one, but I'm scatterbrained.
That's all good.
That, you know, at that time, like I also didn't like the stuff I was putting out. I did that EP. I literally wrote it 2 weeks before I recorded it. First time I recorded something. And what happened was I would just take my guitar to work sometimes. And I worked with a Bulgarian guy who like used to tell me just mad conspiracies all day. He used to be just pointing at the sky going, you know, that's not the real sky. You know, that's an LCD screen light. And it was so funny. Like it was just brilliant. It's kind of like what I needed. But at lunchtime, I would just like play my guitar outside. They had this little like picnicky area, like hidden at the back for all the mechanics and stuff. And I just, one day I was like, oh, what if, I just in my head, I was thinking like, what if, you know, Blind Willie Johnson or whatever had this guitar right now and just started playing and they wrote like an original Delta Blues song that isn't a direct copy. And that's where I just started playing that melody to When Death Comes for Me, which again, it isn't based on anything. I don't know how to play any of their songs. I mean, melody wise, it takes a lot from that. I just knew, you know, third, fifth, seventh, 10th, those are the frets that you can literally use. So, you know, it's like how many variations of it can you get? So it was literally just me going, what if I do it that way? What if I do it this way? Because that's kind of how I play guitar. I don't, I don't go, oh, let's go from the A to the, I don't know music like that. I just see it as numbers or colors like Devin Townsend. And I remember like it was 2 or 3 days later, the Bulgarian guy, Yavor, he was singing the melody. And like, even I'd forgotten it. I had it like on my phone on like an audio thing. And even I sometimes was like, what did it go like again? I'm like listening to it like, oh yeah, now I get it right. And he was just singing it perfectly. He's like, oh, wow. He's like, man, that melody you had is cool. And it was, again, you know, I never really had a lot of pushing me to go, oh, you're doing really good. So when people did it, you know, I stupidly just went crazy and was like, right, I'll do an EP then. I'm a musician. And put the 5 songs together really easily. Like, because I had a lot of time to just think at that moment. So I'd just walk away from him while he was telling me about, you know, chemtrails and things, just thinking, right, what am I going to write and what am I going to do this? So I put that together, that came out. It did really well. And then I just thought, right, well, that means I got to do an album. So I just started writing an album like the next day. so I think that was August 5th, 2016. Then I released my album in October. So I then did the same, recorded, we moved house as well. We moved to Chiswick from Shepherd's Bush, which isn't far, but we're just an ordeal. And then I had an Italian neighbor that really did try and kick my door down many times. I remember putting it on like Instagram with like photos of a note he put through saying, and he was a musician, funnily enough, but he just did not like what I was doing. So again, I did an album in 3 months and then that did really well. And then I flew over to Michigan to meet Matt because there was a documentary getting made and he was like, right, I need somebody short notice. And I was just like, I'll do it. And I just like quit my job to go do it because I just thought this will be it. And it wasn't. and then I was like, right, I'll write another album and I put that out in December. So I did 3 like records in a short amount of time. And then again, like now when I look back, there's some great songs and cool little things that I was trying, but a lot of the songs I'm like, what was I thinking? Like either that's a blatant ripoff because you couldn't think of something, or you were just trying to say something, but I'm just terrible with words. So I was like, this isn't your game. And then I did a few singles after, like while it was whittling down, and obviously I quit my job and it sort of lasted a few months before I just got scared and thought, I need to get a job again. And it just sort of started again, sort of thing.
Mm. When did you start working with KK Hammond?
That would have been when I moved to Stirling. Because
you guys did it. You'd done a few things together now, haven't you?
Yeah, because at the beginning, I'd set up that studio and I was doing all sorts of things, trying to, you know, find my voice, really. Because I just felt like the Charlie X thing just wasn't working. I'd got better, you know, because it wasn't like I started when I was 12 and now I'm 30 and I'm amazing. It was like, no, I just did this 12 years ago with a Eagle Eye Cherry song, you know, or I think Jack Johnson as well. Like, you'd never think I'd play that. I don't know how to play it now, but it was like, that's the song you can play easily and sing at the same time because I just couldn't get that. So when I got to Stirling, I just felt like I've got to this point, I'm recording this sort of stuff. I'm now in a better place for this is what I want to do. I've got a better sound. In between, I went to an open mic night in Leeds when I lived there, and randomly a guy came up to me and he just said, oh, you're really good. Do you want to come to my studio? And again, you're thinking, is this just like some guy that's, you know, a sex offender that's just trying to get into his house? I kind of thought, oh yeah, whatever. Like, you know, and
it's worth a punt.
Yeah. And it actually ended up being a guy that records for Universal Studios, Channel 4, you know.
Oh, wow.
They recorded the first Sugar Babes album, made millions, and then bought this manor house and converted it. So like when I went there, I was amazing. Like, oh, this is legit. So I recorded with them a little bit. So that gave me like a step up again, you know, in between. And that was really cool. But then also it was an insight into how the industry works because I had no idea. Again, I didn't have any people that were actually in it. You know, I didn't know that if you don't have a manager or you don't have these people on the inside, you're screwed. Like the you're really making it difficult for yourself. So it sort of showed me, oh, right, okay, now I've got these people, all these doors are opening. But also sitting in a writer's room, I was like, I hate this. This is the most worthless thing I've ever done in my life. Like, oh, let's not say that word because, you know, we want this to be summary and that we want it to also be male and female. You know, they were just saying all this stuff. I'm like, just tell me what to shout.
So what was that writing for?
Just adverts and TV TV like stuff as well. Music. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I did like, I think some of it was used for Homes by the Sea.
Right.
And then me and Martin were on Come Dine With Me because Jack couldn't be there. So there's an episode of Come Dine With Me where we're in the manager of the Beautiful South's house.
Oh, wow.
I later found out that he asked an actual like band to do it. And then they cancelled, so he just thought, "Ah, Dave will just turn up." So it was like a last minute thing. So it wasn't like he intended for us. So, and again, you know, it was just all of this where you just started seeing all this stuff was happening, and you just thought, "Oh, is this how it works?" But anyway, going back to it, I'd learned all of that, started recording again in Stirling, but more in this new vein where I sort of decided I'm not going to show my face. You know, I'll try and mainly maybe stick to like instrumental only for a bit because I just wasn't happy with what I was writing. Or, you know, I was like, I get it. People think, oh, the voice is a gimmick. But then if I sing like me, then they're like, oh, like another white guy singing blues for grannies. Like, I just didn't want to do that. So it's like this torment, you know, where I was trying to find this line.
That's a great name for a live DJ.
Yeah. So I think Chris had reached out, or we just started talking because she had a different name at that point, and she was trying to figure out what she gonna sort of dip her toe into. Obviously, she's, you know, she was playing and had music, and she was in like a hardcore band like before, so she had a bit of experience and things. But I think she was in that same point of trying to figure out, you know, what am I gonna make this, you know, and she just started talking to me. I started teaching her just some little things on Logic. And I know she's got a lot of other friends that know a lot more. So I think at that point she was just trying to absorb all that info of, you know, how to play like this, how to record, how to do all of this. So that was kind of just how we became friends. Just seemed very quickly realized that she was very similar to me, where kind of a jaded person, you know, a bit of a recluse, don't really want to do this and be out there, kind of trying to do it and poke fun at things, and same sense of humor, like a dark sense of humor. So we just really got on, and it's been like that since, you know, every time we talk, or I asked them to do the, everyone sing along to the Frog song that I just put out.
Oh, that was brilliant, man. That was so cool.
You know, it's just really nice to have really talented people to just go, hey, do you mind doing this? I know it's a bit silly, but they're just immediately like, hell yeah, of course I will.
Yeah.
And she's one of those people that like, that really knows how to write. You know, she'll come up with a story where I'm like, I wouldn't have thought of that. I mean, that's why my songs are dumb and just like, you know, I wish I was a frog, or like, where's my frog? I'm just trying to keep it simple, because I tried to do the, you know, ambiguous and metaphor stuff, and everyone just went, he's just copying this, and he's, you know, he's not singing about things. And
that is one of the really hard things though, isn't it? Yeah. Like, and we should definitely get back to talking about the Frog song, but, but like, I've found like, I'm not a writer.
Yeah.
I don't, never really have been. Mm. I've always been kind of a side man. I've always worked with somebody who's the lyricist.
Yes.
Because I find that either my lyrics, well, I spent a lot of years just being like, I don't know what I have to say about anything, really.
That's the
you know,
same
I don't
as
know
me.
What my opinions are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you know, then I'll try to write something and try and make it sound intelligent, and it sounds like a sort of poor man's Tool.
Yes.
Like I'm trying to be Maynard, but I'm not. So it's just lots of long words in French or Latin that I had to look up.
Yeah.
You know, the point where you got the thesaurus open. So yeah, for me, I just couldn't do it. But it is one of those things where I think it's a kind of being true to yourself thing, isn't it?
Definitely.
I think if you don't have like a yearning to, you know, write something deep about the sort of, you know, the, I don't know what they call it, you know, the sort of condition of being a human, then don't, you know.
Exactly. Kind of, yeah. Just sing about a frog.
And you got a number one on iTunes or on Apple Music with a song you recorded with a soup can mic.
I feel like that's
got to be the only time that's ever been done.
I think the guys at Soup Can confirmed that. Yeah, I think that is the first time it's been done. So
that's amazing.
I actually bought another one. It just arrived today, so I've got two now because I'm thinking of trying to do it in stereo, record the guitar and the voice at a better thing. Because normally cool. I'm like pitched over and it's here and I'm like curled up trying to put it together. Because I only like doing stuff in like one take. I just can't do tracking and things. When I do like heavier stuff, I can, because that's how I learned when I was really into metal and had loads of guys into metal. But with this sort of stuff, I always just want to do it in one take.
That's the way this kind of, that's the way that kind of music is, isn't it? I mean, all of the old field recordings, the Alan Lomax stuff, it's all, you know, none of it's double tracked, obviously. But how does the soup can mic work? Is it like a contact mic inside the can?
I think so. Like, to be honest,
yeah,
don't really know. Again,
does it just look like a can?
It's just a can with a bit of Hessian like on the edge of it, and then it just has a 3/4 jack, like a guitar jack. So you can actually plug it into amp simulators or an amplifier, and I know people have used it for like harmonica and things like that. So it's a really cheap and effective mic. And I think, you know, I've spent time like recording with these kind of like condenser mics, but you know, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm yelling towards it. I've got steel guitars that are loud, so I'm like trying to sing loud because the guitar's loud. It's just, everything's terrible. I don't know how to mix. I just sort of move things until I'm like, oh, that's about right. And I just don't want to know. I just want to play like music.
Yeah, but that's the way to do it. I mean, it's minimalist, isn't it? I do a lot of teaching and I don't do too many shows really anymore, but my rig when I do shows has changed so significantly in that I take less and less and less with me. And then sometimes just a clip on tuner, I don't have any pedals, no pedal board. I think because sometimes I just, you know, unnecessarily overcomplicate stuff. And it's so easy to do that, especially with access to all of this technology.
Definitely.
And the reality is, as you've kind of proven, is that, you know, if it's good, it's good. And it doesn't really matter if you record it with 1,000 tracks or one person sitting and singing with one mic.
I mean, I don't know if I could claim that it's good. I feel like it's just, I'm very lucky that there's a lot of people that listen to me and I'm very fortunate, but you know, I'm just, like you said earlier, like I'm just being true to me now. I'm just singing like songs that just come to me as they come. The next one might be just some crazy octave fuzz thing with drums. It could be synth wave because I've really got into playing with synths, but again, don't really know what I'm doing. I'm just now at the point where David and the Devil has become what I wanted it to be, where it's just now an outlet for every influence that's hit me, because my influence is bonkers. Like, it's, and it grows every day because I'm like my sort of, what's it like, you're my view count on YouTube, like what I watch daily, it's borderline, you know, it's terrifying. I just go down stupid rabbit holes, whether it's music, whether it's marble racing, you know, just all sorts of weird stuff. I find I'm like, I'm just going to watch all of this and get it. And then, new music comes and I just love getting into all of that. And then I'm like, right, what can I do with this? What are the thing could I make out of this thing? So I think that's what I wanted it to be. I wanted to be at the point where I could do whatever I want. And I think there was a point where I tried to do something with Charlie Hicks and it just backfired. And I just thought, but this is like what I want to do. Like, I did all those songs because, you know, the first one was like, I think I could do this. Then the others were basically just, right, let's just do the same thing, make more of it. And I regretted that right away. And I thought, crap. Again, there's some songs that I love, like Don't Rain on Me is one of those songs that some people have just said some lovely things about it. And it means something to a few people. And even seeing you play it is just like blows my mind, because I'm like, damn, this is just like a silly song. I just thought, right, it needs to be easy so I can play this in one take. How do I, you know, do this? So, yeah.
But I think a lot of the time for me, the most interesting musicians to follow are the ones who are like that. I mean, Devin Townsend's a good example. Like, he he records and writes what he wants to record and write. You know, he doesn't, he's certainly not trying to remake any Strapping Young Lad stuff. You know, he just does.
No, but he might.
Doing the stuff you never know. Yeah, exactly.
And that's.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I've always really liked musicians like that. I mean, I've recently got really back into Captain Beefheart. Oh, same kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it's just, he just, and it's Frank Zappa is another one.
Definitely.
But it's this, you know, it's the opposite to, and there's nothing wrong with them, but it's the opposite to like AC/DC, where I know what AC/DC's new record's going to sound like before I've heard it. I know exactly what it's going to sound like. I can probably play it before I've heard it.
Yeah.
But, you know, with somebody like Captain Beefheart or any of those kind of more experimental or just kind of wholly authentic.
Yeah, artists. One of the, another big one that you might have heard of, he did a few, like a bit of producing for people as well, but he's been a musician for a long time, is a Swedish guy called Mattias Ia Eklund.
Oh, yeah.
If you've heard of him, like, I remember when there was a Total Guitar magazine that came out when we were kids, and it blew our minds. And that was the good thing of, like, when I moved to the UK, eventually, like, I found a group of friends that each of them, you know, like, I'd never even seen a guitar in person, I don't think, in Germany. Like, you know, I had no... had no knowledge of any. I listened to like The Shadows, Dire Straits, Eric Clapton, Gary Moore. Those were like the big things. And then I remember going to a friend's house and he had like a red, like a Sunburst Samick, you know, like Strat copy. And I just knew that the whammy bar, if you moved it, I was just like, oh, I just like sort of played the strings and moved it. And just, I was like, I've got to get a guitar. But what was really cool is each of them were into a certain style. So like one friend who is the, like his dad was the guy I worked for later on, him and his dad would play like Thin Lizzy. So they were like classic rock, but then they both were into prog and Dream Theater and like Kiss as well. So they were like classic rock. So they would like teach me all this classic rock things. Then I would go two houses down to my crazy friend Bambi, like who was into like the most extreme metal. He would like hang out of his window with the speakers as loud as you could put it. He was just like Dennis the Menace, like of the street. So he would teach me all of this crazy stuff that was like, oh, you see this? They like kill someone on stage while they play. And just, it was like everything just had to be extreme. And yeah. And then other friends would like, oh, he's really into reggae. Or he, there was one friend that, like, that would come to his grandma's every few weeks. He was really into John Mayer and Ray Charles and all this sort of thing. So it was just really cool to sort of sit with them. They teach you all this thing and then you'd go to the next and then you'd be like, right, give us all of this thing. And I just absorbed it like a sponge.
Yeah.
And that's why, sort of no one knows what I'm going to do next because even I don't.
That's really cool though. I mean, I think, like I say, I think that always makes for the most interesting catalog, doesn't it?
Yes.
When you look back on it and you've been doing it for 30 years or something, you can either have a catalog of stuff that sold relatively well, but is all basically the same because you just kept rinse and repeating the same formula.
Yeah.
Or you can have, you know, quite an eclectic mix of, you know, different stuff you tried. And yeah, I always think it's more interesting to have a bit of an experimental edge.
Definitely.
I get kind of bored kind of quickly with bands that really do sound the same each time. You know, and like I said, there's nothing wrong with it. I would still go and see AC/DC just because why not?
Me too.
Although it's like £200 a ticket, so maybe I wouldn't. But
yeah, that sort of thing puts me off. But if you were given the ticket, yeah, I would.
Oh,
I would
for sure. Yeah, 100% absolutely.
Go.
In fact, I did see Brian Johnson. Like, I was at the Taylor Hawkins tribute show a couple of years back.
Oh, amazing.
And he was at that one, and that was wicked. He had a really awkward moment with Justin Hawkins on stage where they didn't really know who was supposed to be singing which part. Kind of wrestled over a microphone for a second.
Jesus. So do you live in London?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just outside Reading.
Oh,
so
right, okay, right.
Kind of west side, yeah. Where are you now?
Glasgow.
Oh, you're in Glasgow? Yeah. Oh, okay,
cool. That was probably another point I would put on top of the Charlie Hicks thing, that anyone that would think, oh, like, you know, he got some critics and he couldn't take it, like, moving to Scotland has removed that from my soul.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I mean, my partner is Glaswegian as well, which has helped, but moving here and walking into a garage, especially being, you know, I don't consider myself English, but coming in as an English person, like that was a, a full circle, because I used to work for, you know, back when I was talking about being bullied and things, I worked for Leeds, I worked for Leeds Audi, and then I was made redundant because it was 2009 where the banks crashed, which sort of led me down the route of going to this night shift thing. So going full circle, I was then 33 walking into a job interview in Glasgow to Audi again. And it was like, if you would have told me that as a kid, I'd have been like, no way. Not that, you know, it's a scary place or anything like that, but it obviously has a stereotype. And some of the mechanics were definitely the stereotype personified, or they tried to make it that way. But the good thing was, is most of them played guitar. So just instantly there was just this connection. And yeah, there's a video on my YouTube, like a few months into starting, I brought my tricone in and just played like As the Crow Flies when everyone was finishing. It was just, it was just one of them things where like, that was a good icebreaker. I mean, I was still called the C word like pretty much every day, but it's like a term of endearment. So, but I think,
how do you explain the Glaswegian thing? Because I have a lot of American listeners. How do you explain the, like, I mean, is it right to say it's like the Detroit of the UK? Maybe
I don't even think I could. There's no place like it, and it's been the best place to be. Like that, I've never.
I remember Frankie Boyle once said that he could describe Glasgow in that he once saw somebody on the night on the way home from a night out, really drunk, peeing on a front door, and then taking out their key to open it.
Pretty much, and I think that's what I'm trying to say about how it's been, that it just removed that part of it. You know, when I was friends with musicians in Milton Keynes and things, it was like my first like dip in the water with, this is how musicians act. And I just didn't like it. Cause I was like, I can't do that. I can't be like that. It's just not me. And then, you know, there's the sort of egotistical side of things that eventually comes out, even though, you know, I'm not that guy, but I guess in some way it started to become a thing. But that's what Scotland isn't, and Scottish people have none of that. They don't care about that. They don't want that. There's no ego. No one cares if you do something, you know, it's just cool that you do it. And they're a lot more supportive. And they're like, one great thing that has come out of being here is, you know, the condition I have is called Becker muscular dystrophy. It's quite rare. I think there's like 8,500 people in the world with it. It is closely related to another one called Duchenne, which is a hell of a lot worse, which is a lot more spoken about because it's a lot more aggressive. So that's one that a lot of people have heard of. Becker is very similar but slower acting, and you know, you can sort of get away with it for a little bit longer like me. But that moment that I found out, like obviously, I was just at work, just silent. I didn't say anything like the whole day. I was just terrified. Just didn't know like what to do now. And my partner had found that there was a guy in like just 10 miles away that had Becker and was like a blogger and a poet called Joe Logue. And he's become like one of my best friends because didn't know each other before.
What are the odds of that, man?
Oh, I know. And he doesn't really listen to the kind of music I listen to. He's into hip hop and things and, you know, does poetry. So I'm crap at writing and I don't really listen to hip hop. But because we've got this condition, we've become like super close because he's creative. I'm creative. Mm. We've got this condition. And also he's had it since he was 3 years old. Wow. He's known since he was 3 years old.
He's had it.
Because his granddad had it, which he's got some amazing stories about it. And just being a Glaswegian as well, he's just got a great dark humor and just a great way of describing things. But he's lived his whole life wondering, you know, would it be different if he wasn't told by his mum, you know, you can't do that, you can't do this, you can't do this with the other kids. And he's wondered his whole life. And then I've come into the scene and gone, you know, I was told my whole life,
you've had that,
you can do everything. You're just weak or crap or stupid. So, you know, here I am, I can give you, we can trade stories. So it's been really good to have that connection as well.
That's crazy.
Sadly, we're going to have to move. So we're moving, like we bought this place. This is our first place we bought But we're going to have to move soon. Like I've started a drug trial. It's the first of its kind for this sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
So it was like immediate. We just sort of Googled it and was like, oh, there's a drug trial happening. It's the first time. And it's literally just happening right when you found out. So I go to...
That's crazy,
isn't it? I go to Newcastle upon Tyne every month to do this, to take part in this drug trial, do all these tests and meet these amazing people. And again, never really spent much time in hospitals. And it's just, it's been wild because I've just found out that I'm in this. So we're going to move to like the Newcastle area. My parents live there now. My sister lives there. My partner's parents have just moved from the Highlands to Northumberland. So we kind of realized that you're probably going to be going to these things a lot. And now this whole network's here. I'm going to miss this place. And also Newcastle's kind of a little bit similar in a sense.
Yeah. You know, it's got a similar vibe. Yeah. I got a lot of love for Scotland. I'm a big fan of it. In fact, my grandparents grew up in Scotland, but not because they're from there. They were evacuated there during the war.
Right. Where did they go?
But they grew up in Dumfries and Galloway.
Oh, nice.
They're back down in England now, but yeah, I've always had a lot of love for Scotland. Yeah. And I think there's something about, the guy I used to write with, actually, a guy called Kyle McKenzie. He was, we played in a band together for years, and he was from Aviemore.
Oh, yeah, that's where they lived, funny enough.
Same kind of thing. Oh, really?
Yeah, so I've been there so many times recently.
Yeah, wow. That's sort of a skiing country.
Mm. Yeah, there's just no snow anymore. That's like, it's just gone. Yeah.
That's what I hear, right? That's crazy. But he just has a great sense of humor and just, you know, fully kind of, I don't know, like if you think that English people are dry, like Scotland's like another level.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Yeah. And that's, and like I say, that's been the thing that's helped me the most. That was it came the right time. I wish I would have come here as a kid because it would have stripped that out of me. Because I'm like a people watcher. Like I love observing things like that and really getting into, you know, the culture of things. So it's been awesome to be here and sort of work on myself. I mean, I'm a constant person that's done that. It's just unfortunate. Like, yeah, I moved to London. That was hectic. Tried to do music. Mm. It started going well after being in like a wedding band and it going successfully and doing festivals and things. But, you know, just there was bad parts of it. So it was just this mess of things. But now I feel like because of that, because of dealing with it, because of dealing with work, finding out that I've got this and the sort of Scots have ripped out that whole ego and that self-deprecation part of me. I'm just like, I'm a completely different person. I don't recognize the person that I was a year ago, let alone 12 years ago when I'm singing Save Tonight in an open mic night, dressed as like a pirate or something. Like it's just this whole circle where, it's just a wild ride.
It's funny, isn't it? I have a kind of love-hate relationship with London.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was born in London and grew up fairly close by and kind of always been around it. But then when I moved away, I realized that the world, you know, I'd always traveled a lot and gone to a lot of different places, but London is so insular. Yeah. And especially when you're in the music scene there, people in London almost act like there is no music scene outside of London. It's like, oh, I'm playing a show outside of London. And it's like, oh, New York. And it's like, no. And it's like, well, what do you mean? It's either London or New York. And you kind of real feel that pretentiousness of, you know, this kind of London bubble.
That happened to me. Sorry to like cut you off. That was the first time that I lived in Chiswick and I walked down with my two mules and I went to an open mic night that I saw online, but then the guy was like, oh, have you paid? And I was like, what do you mean paid? He's like, oh, you got to pay to be in this open mic night. I just remember just coming outside and some people from, I was working for Mercedes Trucks at that point. Some people had like come that were like really, oh yeah, let's see him play a gig. And I just came outside. I'm like, they won't let me in. He's like, apparently you got to pay to play. I'm like, this is wild. It was just, yeah, it was funny. And then there was a couple moments again, like that, you know, were like reality checks to your ego where I had like that EP out, the album out. I remember, right, like, you know, I think in all my time of being a musician, I think I sent like probably hundreds of emails, and I had one gig like out of them, and it was in Huddersfield. And it was, and there was literally, when I went in, obviously Huddersfield's in Yorkshire, which is like where I grew up for most of the time, like nearby. And it was literally a guy in a flat cap and a border collie dog. And I, you know, and I did my thing. I like did some Rory Gallagher stuff and yelled my head off because I just thought, oh, cool, I could be loud. You know, it's cool.
Yeah.
But I remember writing some things when I was in London, like, oh, you know, like I'm trying to like write this, but I'm terrible at it because I hate it. You know, oh, I just got number one on iTunes. I've got loads of followers on Instagram. And like, you're talking 2016, most people were like, what does that mean? Like, it just didn't mean anything. Now I feel like you go, oh, I've got 10,000 followers. And they're like, oh, come right this way. Here's a table. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
But back then it just seemed like I just didn't get any replies. Like I wrote to the Blues Kitchen and all sorts of things like, hey, do you want like this guy? Like I've been doing this and just never even got a reply. And I was like, oh, okay. And I think like in some way deep down, I just thought it's because you're crap, you know. But I enjoyed like busking in Shoreditch and stuff like that. I used to take my, I took like three of my mules once on like a little cart, like on the tube and went to Shoreditch. I mean, now I know that like if someone just like pushed me over, they would have, I would have one realized that I had a muscle wasting condition because that would have really compromised me. But like you could have just taken them. Like I just, yeah, it was such a stupid thing to do. So yeah. But good times.
Oh, it's funny, man.
So yeah, I was just trying
What's your guitar collection like now? Because you sold Casper a guitar, right?
Yeah, yeah, the Hofner that's covered in snakeskin. Yeah,
yeah, that thing's cool.
Yeah, I can't reach it here because like it'll struggle getting out of this chair. But I've got like a flying V, like a Randy Rhodes looking kind of V. It's got two broomsticks sticking out the top of it. It's made like out of a chopping block about that thick. That the same friend. I feel like my stories are too long and I need like some 4-hour podcast or something. But when I left Milton Keynes, I moved back to Yorkshire and I got this job at this call center doing like working automotive things. And like, that was when I slowly started to now realize, right, you got to be a bit more open. You got to be like out there. So I remember just people were like, oh, what did you do before? And I'm like, oh, I worked at this place, but I play music. Like I do this. And they're like, oh, okay. I like, what sort of thing do you do? And I was, that was when I just got my mule. So I hadn't obviously recorded anything. I was just figuring out. And they sort of pointed at this guy and went like, oh, that guy over there makes guitars and likes music. And they were like, is, you know, and I just got up from my desk, even though you're meant to be taking like breakdown calls. I just went over to him and I'm just like, I hear you're into like guitars and things. I play guitar. Let's meet up. And he lived nearby because I just moved to this particular part of Leeds. And yeah, that just started a friendship where he was just batshit crazy for going, I got a wine box, like this huge box. And he's like, and I put a neck on it. Can you play it? And then I got a gig like in a wine bar and I'm like, bring that guitar. And then, yeah, he just had wacky ideas, but he was more just like tinkering. And it's just brilliant. There's a friend of mine called Adam Lavery. He makes like leather bags and things like that now. He's just one of those guys that just tinkered with everything and made all these crazy guitars. So yeah, I've got an old 60s K like Les Paul guitar, but it was just terrible. I got it for like 30 quid off eBay. So we just took all the bits off it and he just made it into a 4-string flying V, you know, with the Tiesco pickups and then broomsticks for a neck where don't actually touch the neck. So the like actions like 2 inches. So you can only use a slide.
It's like playing a kind of shovel guitar.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a gig in Leeds at some point. I was just like playing drunk once, like when he was around at the house. And I was like, oh, what if I did Voodoo Child? And like, I was trying to figure that out with 4 strings. And I was like, I don't know, just something like this. And he was like, oh, dude, that'll work. So I remember playing at this bar and I thought, right, okay, I'm going to do a song on this thing. And it got to the solo of Voodoo Child and I hadn't quite figured, because like, there's no way of knowing where the frets are. It's literally, you know, it's just.
Yeah.
But I realized with the pedal setup that I had that the pickups were super microphonic. So when I got to the solo, I stood on a table and put the guitar to my mouth and just like shouted to the solo. I just remember like amazing. Someone slamming the table just because they were just blown away. And it was, yeah, it was wild things like that. But so that's
awesome.
That's that one. And then literally I only have five now. When I moved to Glasgow 2 years ago, I had 30 guitars.
30? Yeah. Bloody hell.
I mean, like... I feel worse for my partner because she had to lug them all up the stairs because I couldn't carry shit. But yeah, so you've seen Mule 42. That's a, I'll just get it out again. So that's a single cone steel. Was made a lot different. It's got this like anodized sort of coloring. You know, he later.
Yeah, that thing's awesome.
But it's just got mojo.
Do you know how many they're on now then? If that's 42, like, where are they at now? Must be.
Well, that 12 string is 1,428. But all the models are numbered, so like the Mavises have their own number structure, and so that's 42, which is a really cool number to have as well. Being a fan of
absolutely the answer to life, exactly. The universe, and everything.
Then I used to have a tricone without a pickup, steel, and a single cone brass mule. Because again, those two albums did well. I came out of the Leed City Stompers with all the wedding money, and just thought, screw it, I'll get two more. Like I'll get a tricone and I'll get a brass one because I want a gold guitar. I didn't care what it sounded like. And that's the only one that I sold that I wish, and who knows, maybe I'll get it back. I just need to find the person who bought it. I think it's in Germany. So I need to try and reach out because that was a lovely guitar. But then when I moved to the Scottish borders after having the Wolf and all of that stuff, I'd sold all my guitars and then I gave my MuleCaster just some guy on Instagram just messaged me from Australia, a friend of mine. Like he was a fan, but like everyone that's a fan that's messaged me just becomes a friend. He messaged me like when I was at a low point in St. Albans, went, "What are you doing with that MuleCaster?" And I just went, "Do you want it?" And just sent it to him. I paid like 500 quid to just ship it to him. And it stayed in Australia for 2 years and he passed it around some people that wanted to try it. It was just, it just felt nice to actually just do something like that. So it was really cool. And then, I'm going all over the place.
You're all good.
Then when I moved to the Scottish borders, I think Matt just started to think, I need to get him to play. Like I've got to figure out how to get Dave to play, but stop giving him stuff that he's just selling and paying his rent with, because that's just not working. So it's like a weird story because this is the tricone, but this bit, just the armrest, turned up in an envelope one day, just randomly. He didn't tell me there's a guitar coming. He sent me like the video of Ariel Posen playing this guitar, like this one.
Wow.
So there's like two videos of him playing a track. And I, when I see him play slide on it, I'm like, how did he play slide on this thing? The action is like... so perfect on this that it's too low to do slide on, but he just does it effortlessly. So yeah, that came in like a bag, and I was like, oh Matt, I think, like, you know, I text him all the time, and I sent him a text just saying, dude, I think you've sent this to the wrong address, because like I don't have you know, a guitar like anymore. And he was like, oh shit, I think he forgot to send it. Sent that and it got here before the guitar had. And then literally like an hour later, the door went and there was a guy with a giant box, and I knew sort of the shape of the box because I've bought so many that I was like, oh no. Like, and he was just like, dude, please keep playing. Like, you need to keep playing. Yeah. So he's the most genuine guy ever. He didn't need to do that. I didn't say I wanted to play.
Awesome. Yeah,
he just says, I want you to play. So just keep it, do something with it. Don't do something with it. And that's really the day that David and the Devil started again. So thankfully, awesome. Because of him.
So it's all thanks to Mule.
Yeah.
Amazing. Like, I mean, I thought you were going to say it was like a kind of like a mafia when they cut off the finger and then post it to you.
Like, yeah, it's just a sign. It's just like, right, here you go. This is what you could have had. Or we've got your guitar.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a steel tricone with a pickup, which, you know, on my other tricone, I kind of wish I had because this one's great. I normally have this in standard or open G just because the action is like so close to the frets, and like, yeah, it's a bit of a struggle, especially with like my muscles trying to figure out what's enough and what's not. But so again, it's great guitar for all that sort of stuff. That's even awesome. Like I was doing, yeah, like I was trying to learn like Paul Gilbert stuff the other day. I'm butchering that, but it's like, it's just a guitar that I love to mainly play like songs that are.
Yeah, it's got a great sound.
And then open G's a little bit better, like on it as well, because yeah, a lot of that's, there's a lot of finger work that you have to kind of do to compensate for the tuning. So most of the time I'm normally just in open D, open C, like as in open D, but just down. That's kind of my go-to. And then the final one is the one he gifted me when he came to Scotland in November, which again,
is this recently? Yeah, I think
which was a complete surprise. It was more of a joke to him years ago. It's the first 12 string, like resonator he's made. Cause he made a 12 string for Chris Turpin of Ida May. And I sort of, I sent him the joke that I sent him a long time ago. Cause I remember years ago, I went like, you know what you need to do? Make me a 12 string with a pickup and like, it'll just destroy. And I sort of reminded of him of that when he sort of said, oh, I've made this guitar for Chris. I went like, hey, what about my like requests? Like ages ago, I was like, could you do a 12 string resonator? And then, yeah, I picked him up from the airport in Glasgow and I saw like two guitar cases on the floor. Obviously we were going to see a friend of mine who'd bought one. I was like, why has he got a second guitar? And he's like, open that case as soon as I saw him and just was like, wow. And I made a joke as well saying, make it green. I was like, I want a painted mule now, because that wasn't an option. So, but this thing is just an absolute, like, it's, yeah, I can't believe when I pick it up that I'm like, I've been lucky enough to have such a generous friend that's like, hey, here's this thing, and then use it to make really great music. It's just, yeah, it's unreal.
So, yeah, that's awesome.
This one is...
Sounds so good. Oh, no, this is
just
awesome.
Yeah, it's an amazing guitar. I feel like, yeah, it's...
Have you done much recording with it?
Yeah, well, it's in the background of My Little Frog. Like, it was in like a standard tuning, and then I just figured out the chords that went with the open tune melody. So it's just to give it a bit more oomph, which again isn't my normal thing. I normally one take, that's it. But I just wanted to try and add something for once to make the song a bit more like something that normal people could listen to. Cause I think like someone sent me a thing about my music once, and there was another moment as well that happened. Again, there was a lot of things that just sort of hit me with the Charlie Hicks thing that made it end. But someone sent me a message once from America, and it was like, I can't remember who it was, but it's just brilliant. And it's always the thing I think about, and I like it. They were like, yeah, your music is kind of music that you can't listen to around other people. You kind of only listen to it on your own. And I was like, damn, that makes so much sense. And I was like, and also that's like a proper burn. But yeah, what happened was a friend of mine, like from school, who like, kind of didn't really know, but saw that I was then having some success. I got back in touch when I moved back to Yorkshire, and he owned a barbershop. And he was like, oh, come round. It's like all like 1920s themed and all this. And even though it's like 1920s themed, but then it had a giant portrait of Biggie Smalls on the wall. I was like, I don't think you understand,
of course,
like the contrast, but hey ho. And that's where there's like, I've got a painting from a fan of mine that lived just outside of London that became a good friend, that did a painting of one where I'm sat in a barber chair and he's cutting my hair, and I had my first mule. Like, it's kind of a weird thing, because everyone was... remember them being like comments of like, why are you getting your hair cut with your guitar in your hand? I'm like, I don't know. Just like trying to put things together. Like Instagram was a wild place back then. You just did stupid stuff. And then some guy painted it. Like, so yeah. But what happened was, is he had a few like friends that like, one was like an ASOS model. So he had all these kind of people that were around, like not really my type of guys, like guys that would go to like Ibiza together. Whereas that's just, that's not my vibe. Like I couldn't do that with a bunch of dudes. Like that to me would be my idea of hell. Cause I'm just not, I'm not that, I'm not a lad. So I'd just be culled. So he was like, oh, what's your music thing? And they had like Spotify playing through the speakers. And obviously they're playing like, you know, gangster rap or cool stuff that should be played in a group environment of like a barbershop. And they put on my music and it was, I think it was really like, that was the beginning of when I was just like, yeah, this really sound, this isn't a good vibe. Like it just doesn't vibe. Like there's just, yeah, it just made it hollow. So yeah, that was kind of the first kick in the teeth with that. And there's been others, but I'm just remembering them as they come.
I think you should take that as a compliment. Yeah, yeah. If somebody plays Usher and then plays you and goes, it doesn't fit. Yeah. You'd be like, good.
Yeah. but that's kind of why I've been playing a little bit with, you know, lo-fi and hip-hop beats, because it just started me on to, you know, what was it that didn't work and what is it that made it, what made that work that, you know, and I don't come from knowing a lot about that. My sort of background was classic rock, heavy metal, and sort of guitar virtuoso. That was really my whole life. So that sort of music just completely skipped by me. And then the more that I did night shifts, the more that I kind of wanted to listen to more sort of chill music, because the job was, or the jobs that I've had have always been really stressful and quite demanding.
Yeah.
So then this sort of lo-fi thing has started and got more and more. So I was like, oh, what if you mix like Delta Blues with that? And there is a few people now doing it. Like Buffalo Nichols is like, I mean, he's 100% like just, he's on it. That's the way it should have been done in the first place. Like it shouldn't have idiots like me playing around with it. I don't know what I'm doing. Like he's got way more soul in it. So again, it's more just like, oh, I'll experiment with that. Oh, that's cool. And then, you know, most of the time now I listen to Vaporwave and this, like, it's like slowed down versions of 70s Japanese city pop with beats and things. Oh, it's just this weird thing where I'm like, how did I get to this? I just don't know. It's like, but I listen to that the most.
That's cool,
but still, you know, I still love all the things that started me off, like Thin Lizzy, Rory Gallagher, Martin Offler, you know, Gary Moore, Santana. And then
is that a Charlie Patton tattoo?
Yeah, that's him. I've even got like this whole birthplace and everything up my arm, but
oh damn! That must have been quite painful on the
top. I remember. I think we had a wedding with the Stompers the next day, and my hand looked like a baseball mitt, like it was like this. Yeah, and I was just like, oh, this was kind of stupid. So I'm like playing, but just like holding the pick so steady. But yeah, no, it's one of those things. I kind of regret it now because I feel like it does look a bit stupid, but. Again, just bad decisions. So I was like, if I'm going to do this and people are going to take this white guy seriously, I was like, I need to make a statement. I was like, I'll get like the father of Delta Blues on my hand. That'll tell everybody that I mean business, and it's just backfired.
Well, that's good. I mean, I've got this, which is considerably worse. It's the sign of the Klingon Empire.
Wow.
And it's there forever now. So, yeah.
To be honest, that's at least in a place where one is an easy design that could be covered
easy
up.
Cover.
Yeah, in a place. Yeah. No, that's. So, that's one thing I never got into. Yeah, you're a big Star Trek fan then?
Yeah, I went through. Well, I basically got all my tattoos done within about 6 months each other, and then never got another one. And at the time, I was touring in a band. So the first tattoo I got was the band name tattooed on my ribs, thinking like, this is going to last forever, surely.
Jesus.
And it didn't. And, then I got the bass clefs and stuff tattooed here.
Naturally.
And then I got an Opeth tattoo just cause I really like one of their albums. Didn't like the old stuff very much, but that album Heritage came out. This must've been like 2010, 2011.
Nod to amazing album, classic rock and that sort of thing.
Yeah, they just suddenly became a prog band, and I was there for it. And yeah, at the same kind of time, I was just binge watching Deep Space Nine. And then, you know, so this is very much like a snapshot of my life as like a 25-year-old or whatever I was.
Same with stuff like that. I mean, now I just want to get like covered in frog and alligator tattoos. So, and then, you know, in 10 years, I'll look back and like, what the hell were you thinking? I was like, just get a pet frog or something. Just deal with it another way. Just figure it out. Or just keep writing songs. You know, just it's funny how you sort of, those sort of people, like that sort of mindset gets into these sort of similar music things as well. And you really dive into it. So nice.
That's it. And I think, I mean, you know, these kinds of music are ones that you tend to get obsessive about.
Yeah.
A bit like you do about, you know, other stuff, like people that are really into TV shows and, you know, stuff like that. And like so many people that I end up speaking to on the podcast have this kind of like obsession about the whole history of it. And, you know, cause it's like, it's a huge, it's like learning a language or something. It's like a whole world.
Yeah.
You know, Delta blues all the way up to like, you know, stuff people are playing now. There's just so much of it. And every year there's, you know, it's just being added to, and it's like a huge kind of massive history. It's like the longest running TV show.
Well, that's what it felt like when I did my stuff, that, you know, there was so many other people doing things now. Like I said, with like, I saw Buffalo Nichols doing a thing where you like set off like a drum pad and it just sounded awesome. I was like, there you go. That's exactly what I thought. That would work. And I just think now that like now there's going to be a bunch of kids that start with that and then go back, and you're just thinking, yeah, it's pretty like damn exciting. And you were on about earlier about like technology, you know, that's since I was a kid. I remember 2001, maybe 2002, I got my first like electric guitar. It was like a vintage PRS copy, you know, vintage, the make, not a vintage.
The brand,
And I got like my first pedal with like some Carlsbro solid state amp. Again, I didn't know anything, but it was the Zoom 505 too.
Oh, I remember that. The little box one where you'd hit like,
I remember like plugging that in and just being like, whoa. And then, you know, 2 years later I had like the G9 or the GFX 8 or something, the green one. And oh yeah, it was the green one next, like the 4-pad one with a pedal. I was like, oh man, this is, you know, plugged it into a 100-watt Marshall MG. So it was basically a fan belt driven, like just speaker, which when it made that like horrible, like you had to just hit it and it stopped and the fan belt like skipped. It was like an old car. Like it was brilliant.
Amazing.
And then you would listen back to the 505 going, how did I think that was like good? You know, like I remember being in my room playing to like Ozzy Osbourne or like Randy Rhoads stuff, thinking, oh man, I have got the tone dialed in. And it's just the CD was louder than me. And it was like, oh yeah, that covers it up.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
That was the one where you'd have to cycle through all of the effects to get to the one you wanted.
Exactly.
Right?
You couldn't preset.
So if you want like A1 distortion and you wanted like C1 flanger, you'd have to hit boom really quickly.
Yeah. But yeah. And it was like, had this step phaser on it that just sounded bonk. But again, you know, at that point you were just like plucking a string, and then, because I mean, for the first year of having a nylon string guitar, I didn't know you had to push your fingers into the fret. I thought you put your fingers on the strings like a slide. So I was like playing it going like,
oh really,
this is crap, like I can't do this. But again, I didn't have anyone telling me. I was just kind of an idiot. And then I put it in my cupboard, and it was just like, right, that's another thing that I tried and failed, like skateboards and all that. And then a friend of mine just came around one time. It wasn't a friend that like ever came around again or anything. I didn't really keep in touch with, but he like dabbled with guitar, and he sort of just pulled it out of the cupboard, tuned it a little bit, and played Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin. And I was just like, as soon as he did that, it was like, I never stopped. It was one of those moments. Mm. And then fast forward a couple of years later, on that time when I moved from Milton Keynes back to Yorkshire, I went to an open mic night there feeling like, oh yeah, I know my shit now. So I was telling that story like at this open mic night in like my old town, and I was telling the story, and literally when I got to that point, he walks in, and I didn't know him after school, like he just drifted off. He became a plumber, doesn't play guitar. He's like, you know, and he walked in, and I was like, oh, and his name was Joe Shaw. And he like just pointed at me and went like, Dave. Like, and it was just one of those moments where I was like, that's strange. Nuts, and I just like, right.
Yeah.
Because of him, I'm playing guitar, and he was just blown away. So it was one of them.
That's funny awesome, moments. Man.
That, yeah. You just had to see someone do it. I know a lot of people have got similar stories where you just needed to see it being done in front of you.
Mm.
Cause there was like a disconnect of, you know, at that sort of time, obviously I'm showing my age here, but my dad had like a cool sort of stereo system where you could put a blank tape in, put a CD in the mm-hmm. other one, and then you could choose which songs you wanted off that CD and burn them onto a tape cassette. Because, mm-hmm. you know, the CD players at that time were either massive, or if you even moved them, it skipped. So I was like, yeah, well, I'm walking to school. Yeah. Like, I want to listen to it. So I used to make these mm-hmm. tapes of like all these Gary Moore CDs he got from being away in Bosnia and getting these like bogus CDs where like some songs weren't even him and things where you were like, so for years I was like, oh, that's a Gary Moore song, isn't it? It's like, no, that's like Joe Walsh or something like that. And I'm like, oh, well, it's on this CD.
It's like the early days of LimeWire was like that, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. We were first crazy on LimeWire.
Like you'd download a song and it would be like, it would be not the song or another band playing that song. Yeah, I remember those A to B tape recorders. I think we used to have one of those huge ones in our house that had like the vinyl deck on top. Yeah, yeah. And then had the CD and then had the A to B tape thing underneath it. Yeah. I think everyone must have had those
at that point, you had to have one, but it was just the way that you could sort of make your own playlist. So you got sort of good at thinking like, oh, you know, when I'm going to school, I want to listen to that song and then that's going to fire me up. And then later on it sort of morphed into like heavy metal in a way. Because that was like, you know, Papa Roach and Limp Bizkit came out when I was like dead on 13. Mm. But I remember my sister, like she's older than me, she was kind of into hip hop. So I just turned off to it. I was like, meh, no guitars, not interested. And I remember she got Appetite for Destruction on CD. And I remember putting that in and it was like, whoa. Like it was just the attitude of it. And again, at that point, there was that Led Zeppelin DVD that's got the sort of Arizona or like the desert sort of cover. Mm-hmm. I think it was just called Led Zeppelin.
How the West Was One
was their film, which I saw later, but this was just a bunch of like live clips. So like that came out.
Yeah.
Live in Donington somehow got into my hands. The Steve I Live at Astoria, Rory Gallagher, Irish Tour 74, I saw for the first time. Thin Lizzy, Live and Dangerous, like all these G3, you know, with Eric Johnson, Yngwie Malmsteen.
I remember that.
John Petrucci, all of those came out and it was like everything was just happening. YouTube just started. And I remember like a friend of mine going like, oh, have you seen this thing? People like post videos of them playing guitar and it was, you could just see it snowballing and it had just started. So it was just really exciting because you were just getting all this stuff and then the internet was getting faster. So tabs weren't like a day's work. Because
and terrible.
Oh yeah,
they used to be so bad. Do you remember MX tabs?
Oh yeah, no, I used MX tabs. The one I was going to say it was like this will really set people aside is tabcrawler.cc. That was like that was the first one. I remember like looking up System of a Down things or like the Simpsons theme, and it was just literally, you know, half a page of lines, and you just printed it out because it was faster than doing anything else with it. Because you were just like, right, I've got to print all these. And like friends just had, I had like folders of like, oh yeah, I've got that song somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
But again, you know, I was just playing guitar just to like play in front of my mates and things like that. I'd never thought that I'd ever play to anyone else. I was really like nervous and it was even a struggle to play in front of my mates sometimes. And also video games at that time, this is also why most people, like pretty much everybody that has this disease finds out around that time. But somehow, I mean, I did go to the doctors around that time because I was complaining of like some leg pain and I had like massive calves, but I'm really thin. So I was like, is this right? And they're like, nah, you just need to eat more bananas. That's all. Like, that's all they, and I was just like, okay, but like it really hurts. And it hurts when I eat bananas too. I was like, it doesn't help, you know, and it's just, it was so funny to think of it now. But then I was like, right, the doctor says I'm fine. Eat more bananas. Cool. I'll do that. And it.
That's scary, isn't it?
I feel like this is why it was missed for so long. Cause You know, video games were amazing at that point. Like Vice City came out when I was like 13, 14. So you had this amazing soundtrack. You know, all these games were coming out with this stuff like Dave Mirra as well, Tony Hawk's, all had these soundtracks that were plugging all the new bands that were coming out. All these metal bands were doing new things. It was like, oh, there's seven strings now, there's this. And yeah, it was just really exciting as a kid to be into the, like the classic rock, learn everything you could. Then you're seeing the new people, then they're calling back to them. Then you're looking back and it was just, that was like just the best times really, because
It was very much the same for me actually, because I grew up with my dad was a bass player in a band, nice. Not professionally, but like semi-pro. Yeah. And he's always into classic rock stuff, and you know, took me to my first gigs, Chuck Berry, and then bands like Rush, he was really into. But then same kind of thing, yeah, discovering the whole kind of newer alternative stuff. In fact, I had a buddy that played in a band. I don't know if they still play, a few years ago, but they were a tribute band that only did songs from the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 soundtrack.
That's niche, but I could see that working. Like, I could see that being like, yeah, that's a legit.
Yeah, but you play like a lot of like 30 and 40 year old birthday parties now. Yeah.
So I've done one or two of those as well. And that again, like I'm doing my thing where I'm screaming like Too Much Alcohol by Rory Gallagher or some Charlie Patton tune. I'm like, and I think I did that or something. Like I did it for, I don't know if you know Homatone, James Homatone in Birmingham. He's like the coolest dude ever, knows so much about every aspect of little intricate things and is just a like awesome guy. And I played at his mum's 50th, maybe a 60th probably. And like, I was playing those sort of songs and like kids were like skidding on the floor in front of me. You know, I'm singing like When Death Comes for Me and there's like a kid just skidding on his knees because it's like a family party. It was just the like, yeah, just so funny.
That's awesome.
But you know, it's those little things that I can like and enjoy. But there was just a lot of bad negative gigs where either, I don't know, it just didn't feel right. Because I think I watched all of those DVDs like Pantera Home Videos as well. And love Dimebag Darrell and all this, the sort of the fun things behind the music. And thought, when you get into music, you get some friends together, you get in a band, you get in a van, you travel all over the world and you just have fun. And then, you know, there's obviously more to it. But I think when I started doing it, and this could be because I was dealing with a muscle wasting disorder, and there was probably a point when I was, I can do this. And then slowly it was like, oh, this is really tough. Like, oh, my ribs are killing me and this. And I'm thinking, is it the way I'm singing? Is it the way I'm doing this? Is it the way I'm holding guitar? But, you know, I'm just thinking, oh, this is what everyone's like. You just got to keep doing it. It'll get easier. And I think when I started playing live, there were some gigs where I was like, that was amazing. I can't sleep. That was just bonkers. And then there was just a lot more gigs where I just sort of came out of it. And I remember saying to my partner a few times, just going like, this is really weird. Like I'm not getting like a good feeling after doing this. And I think it was a bit of the pain, you know, I'm just kind of weighing it up. Like it really hurts. It's really a struggle. And, you know, people are trying to swindle you with money. And it was just like, I don't think I can do this. Whereas, you know, I just go to work, I do my thing, I get paid, I can buy cool guitars and I can record at home. And that again is, you know, I've slowly gone back to wanting to be like that, where, you know, now I'm like, we're going to move to a bungalow. So we're not up a staircase, make a place that's really accessible for when like the day comes that I'm going to struggle to walk, but also just a bigger space that I can do whatever I want, you know, just keys, things.
And it's really cool in a way that we're around at a time where, you know, that's a very real thing. Like, you know, recording stuff at home and, you know, I mean, like, I watched a couple of days back the video you and you did with KK Hammond, what's the name of the ballad of
Lampshade Head.
What's the name of it?
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, and stuff like that. Like it's a really cool concept. And, you know, it doesn't require you to go and play shows, also go and do promotional stuff. You know, it's pretty cool now that you can do that.
Yeah, I mean I think Chris wants to stay that way. I think obviously her music's now evolving that she's loving to layer up things, which then it becomes, well, how do you do this live anyway? But I think she likes her life. Like, I've been down to her place, and she's got loads of land, like a farm. It's beautiful. You kind of think, yeah, if I lived here, I wouldn't leave. You've got like a gate around your whole property. Like, this is amazing. I would do the same.
Yeah.
I think, like, I've popped up now and then, like my friend Joe Loco, I was talking about, who has Becca that does poetry. I've been to a poetry night here and just sort of took my guitar as like a, yeah, I'm just going to impose on all you guys and sing about something stupid, like that you're going to be like, what's this? This is terrible writing. And just be like, yeah, I'm just going to sing it. So I enjoy to like pop up and do my thing. It's always fun for me, because like I talk and people are like, oh, okay, that's how you sound. This is going to be like, you know, yeah, I can tell what this is going to be. And then I just start yelling and people are like, whoa, like just, so that's always a good feeling to just do now and then. But I think now it's been a couple years since I've done it properly that I've started getting like a bit of butterflies and things like that. And that's the thing, like, I feel sorry for Matt at Mule, because he did an album years ago that's amazing. Like, he's an amazing musician.
Oh, really?
And he won't do anything with it, because he's got severe like stage fright and things, but he's unbelievable. And you wouldn't think it, because he's such a well-rounded, philosophical, you know, the guy's got a million quotes that can change your life, which I found out driving around Scotland with him, that, but seeing someone like that. And I've got a lot of friends that did that. I've got a friend down in Essex called Perry Bryan that, you know, when I was just getting into music, I was like, why am I getting followers and this guy's got nothing? And I remember I went down to record on his like last album, and he played it to me and I just started crying. And I was just like, I was like, see, this is why I shouldn't be doing music. I was like, because that sounds amazing. That's got violin in it. That's got chord changes. That's got all of this. It's got stories. You've written it down in a book by hand and it's beautiful and goes nowhere. And I'm just like, yeah, this just, I think little things like that just dug at me, where I had these really amazing friends and he's like one of many, like another one in Yorkshire, Rory Hall. He just, amazing guy, records like unbelievable music, just has all these bands, all these projects going, and struggles. And I'm just like, yeah, this just doesn't feel cool for me to just come in and go, I've nicked a few bits from this guy, done this, and boom, I'm up here, see you later. But you know,
I think you're doing yourself a disservice there.
I think, like, you know, it then was like, well, I'm in the same position really. It's like you can have hundreds of thousands of followers and have iTunes number ones, but really that doesn't equate to a lot now, because it's changed. Back in 2016, Spotify and everything paid you, I feel like, a bit better.
Money.
Yeah, whereas now it's like 30 quid every now and then. You're just like, I mean, that is still amazing. When I was working, that was like, you know, just beer money or like Fat Friday money. We're just like, oh, anyone want a pizza? I'll get it, because I've got 30 quid from Spotify. So I used to just get all the mechanics to just play my music all the time. Just to be like, look, if you keep playing it, we'll be able to buy donuts.
We'll keep having pizza.
It's like when that song I did with Chris, the Charlie Patton cover with the lo-fi beat. I said to like all the mechanics, like, everyone buy it and I'll go and buy like 200 donuts from Krispy Kreme. So they're all like buying it and it was number one again. And I just like nipped out, came back with just trays of donuts. So I'm just like, right, come and get them. It's just, cool to do. So things like that. It's like, that's
awesome.
That's,
man,
kind of, they're the positive things that I love about what I'm doing now, that, you know, and doing something like this. I've never done something like this, but I've probably watched the most podcasts of anyone. You know, I mainly watch like comedy ones and some music ones. But I don't know if you're a fan of other podcasts. Like, I watched Kill Tony. That's an amazing one.
I've never seen that one, but I've heard really good things about it.
Especially the early ones, because they had a band on stage. So it's people like doing an open mic night in LA at the Comedy Store. But they had a band doing music, but also improvising and dressing up as characters. So you just had this, and then you've got amazing comedians grilling these people.
Was it Tony Hinchcliffe? Is
Tony Hinchcliffe, Brian Redburn.
Oh, cool.
It was Jeremiah Watkins and like a bunch, but now it's in Texas, which I kind of,
He's on Rogan. He's on Rogan. Yeah.
I really wanted to go to one because there was one showing when I went to Texas last year to see Family, and I was gutted. I missed it. It was like sold out. So I want to go back because and that's the thing as well. When I went to Texas, I was never really into country music, but my dad listened to like Johnny Cash and Waylon Jennings a lot. But I kind of just thought, meh, not into country, don't get it. And then when I went to San Antonio, I like made a playlist of like all the, you know, the most cliche country music stuff and, you know, the good stuff like Colter Wall and
he's amazing, and I love that guy's voice.
Sort of wave, not the pop country. I can't do with Morgan Wallen and all that stuff, but yeah.
No, but like Jason Isbell.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to, I'm forgetting names, but I'm even finding others. I mean, I grew up with Jerry Reed as well because I was a big fan of like, you know, Dukes of Hazzard and The Bandit, things like that. Mm-hmm. So that sort of music was in the house quite a lot. But yeah, as soon as I got to Texas and went to like a cowboy shop and listening to, you know, all those classic George Strait and real Texas tunes as well. And being a fan of Stevie Ray Vaughan as well, it just hit me. I was like, I get it. I got it. Like, I totally get it. So there's like an aspect now where I'm like, I've gone into that rabbit hole and so it's good.
Yeah. I mean, you'll be like me saying you just have tellies.
Yeah.
It kind of happened to me when I was living in, Shanghai, I played with a band and because they're not used to seeing Westerns. Yeah. In a lot of the parts of China and stuff, they just assumed I was American and put me in this band and were like, you're playing country music. I was like, I'm doing what?
Okay, that's country music.
Yeah. You know, your music. And I was like, okay, cool. And then, it just gets under your skin and you're like, yeah, this is good awesome.
So what made you go there? Like, what was the...
So it was kind of, I guess I've been touring in bands here for quite a long time before I left and I got kind of burnt out by it. And it was a bit, and I have this kind of, I used to, not so much anymore, but I used to have this real love-hate relationship with gigging. Yeah. I used to both love it and hate it. I used to hate the travel, especially as I used to do a lot of the van driving. but, you know, I used to enjoy the shows, but then that was like, you know, 2% of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So then I got a job in a guitar school in Shanghai to go and teach guitar. So I moved out there for that. And then I was like, I'm never going to play a gig again, or like, I'm not going to gig anymore. Just not going to do it. I took one guitar with me and this thing called a snap axe, which is one of those guitars that you snap them in half. So I took that with me because it was, you know, hand luggage. And then within a week, I booked my first bunch of gigs and it just kind of happened. I walked into a bar like over the road from the apartment that I'd rented and it was run by a British guy. And kind of told him what I was doing. And he was like, oh, you've got to come and play. Hey, Thursday? I was like, okay. And then that's when I started playing kind of solo shows. Before that, I'd been playing just as a sideman in bands and stuff. And then I started doing solo gigs and started doing a lot of Delta Blues stuff. Because I've kind of got a similar-ish voice to you. And I kind of was like, what can I do playing guitar and singing? Like, what can I... Because I can't, you know... I can't convincingly do the Jack Johnson thing.
I can't anymore.
So I was like, what can I do? So I was like, what can I do? And I was like, well, I can play Key to the Highway. And it was like, okay, that's somewhere to start. And then it kind of took off from there. But and then ended up staying there for quite a few years before we moved. We were there the whole time through COVID and then moved back in 2022.
What a culture change.
Yeah, crazy, man. It was crazy. I mean, that's actually when the podcast started because we had COVID a little earlier than everybody else. So it was like, got to find something to do because the guy who ran the guitar school I was working for, he went to Mali it was Chinese New Year, which is like a big holiday. So everyone leaves. So everyone's off work. So he went to Mali. And I was in Japan and then I came back. I flew back from Japan the day before the borders shut, but he didn't make it back in. So he couldn't get back into China. We couldn't open the school because the government wouldn't allow it. And nobody had the keys. He had the keys. So, I mean, I couldn't even go and get my stuff. So I had guitars locked in there for quite a long time. And then, then we couldn't work. So I ended up starting to teach and stuff online, and that's kind of how this all happened.
Oh, but, great! No, that's such a
like, crazy, man.
Such a bold move as well. What a bit surprised as well that like that music then is still over there. Like I remember seeing people in Japan that were into like Delta blues. There's guys that are really into, you know, old pre-war things, and you just think that's a bit strange. Like on your sort of
it's your weird
connection
isn't it?
To the war, you'd think you were the last people, but it's kind of cool that
but
there's like they're really into it. They just really love it. There's one particular guy that I haven't seen in a while that used to message me that's like Japanese that has all this vintage stuff, and he's got a room just dedicated to, you know, all this
awesome.
Like Mississippi memorabilia. It's done like really well. Like he knows his stuff. It's just blows my mind that those little pockets. So like every time you get your sort of your Spotify Wrapped thing and it tells you what countries are listening to you, just blows my mind that there's people that are listening to some guy either in Scotland or just somewhere that is playing something like that. But it's cool as hell.
Yeah, this it was a couple of weeks back, but the podcast hit number one in Namibia.
Wow.
That was one of those like, what the fuck, man? It's a shout out to whoever's listening in Namibia. That's amazing. But yeah, it's just, that's cool. That's the cool thing about all this stuff being online is that, you know, your music can just reach so many people.
Yeah. And that would probably be cool the reality thing. If I did the Charlie Hicks thing and I would have just done CDs and played on the street, it probably would have gone nowhere. And that would have probably been the better way that it went, because that's what I expected, because I never expected anything to happen. But I think the problem is it went well, and I just thought, oh, I could do this instead of do my shitty job. And it didn't really, you know, I think it just scarred me. And I feel sorry for all the young people that are going down that route and maybe haven't realized that yet. But I think I just look at myself in the mirror too much, and as in, you know, internally, and think, you know, I don't think this is the way you should be. And just, that doesn't sit with me. So, you know, I can't sort of be the same way. I'm like, I've got to prove things. And it was.
Keeps you moving though, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
that's great, man.
Ultimately, awesome.
Well, I'm going to wrap this up.
I'm sorry. Like, I feel like I've just gone on tangents. Key moments that I should have probably explained better, but it's my first time doing it. Give me a break.
It's all good, man. I will have to have you back. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That'd be great
You'll have to. That's awesome, man. Obviously, depending on how you are for picking out people, but, you know, friends of mine, especially people that were in the video, like Sabrina, the Stardazed Trail, she would be an amazing person to speak to. Also, I think she's a massive Star Trek fan, so I think you guys would like just have another venture to talk about. But she's amazing.
Awesome.
Like, she did my artwork. Plays amazingly. Like that cover we did was just random. I just did it, said, hey, what if you sang on this, and she just did that whole guitar part.
That's wicked, man. Send me some people. I'd definitely love to.
I need to try and do like another video, but I'm trying to combat this disease and figure out what my future holds now, because able to do music a little bit, but I'm just trying to figure things out before we move.
It's awesome, man. It's inspiring. I love it.
So
I'm a big fan of the music. So,
really appreciate it.
It's been great, man.
Yeah, it's been great.
I've got 160 something episodes talking about nothing but guitar. So, I mean, it is really nice to be able to talk about,
I mean, like,
you know, guitar amongst other things.
We could do another one at some point, maybe when I'm at the new place, when we've got set up, and I could do more of a, hey, here's how you do this little thing. And not that I really know what I'm doing, you know, it's just everything's around there. Third and fifth fret, sometimes at the 12. That's keep great, it around that.
Sounds good.
And then it's a little song about a frog.
I mean, I know you say you don't do this on purpose, but you write the most gorgeous melodies. Like, that's just an awesome melody.
Again, someone will probably come out on some forum and say, I can't believe he ripped off this. And I'm like,
Delete Reddit.
I've like no idea. I just sat for ages just going like, and that's normally how I write again. Like that's probably another conversation that I could have, but rather than speak about myself and my mental problems. But yeah, one of the things would be that that's just how I start. It's, I have to have the melody on the guitar because most of the time I'm just going to sing to that. You know, I listened to some of the Charlie Hicks stuff a while back and I can't even remember how I did it. There's somewhere I'm like playing. I was like, where did I get that from? And how did I sing at the same time? And it just came to me, you know. But now I really focus on, I want this melody to be really nice and really catchy. And I want it to be like nice to play. You know, I don't want something that I'm like, oh man, I just about pulled that off. Like, so that's the thing as well. And I think really that's come from listening to a lot more singer-songwriter and especially Tom Waits. That's like the big, you know, really trying to understand, you know, like that's really simple, but it's really effective. You know, what is it about that? And that's the thing with Charlie Patton that, you know, I think is sometimes, you know, I knew about Robert Johnson before Charlie Patton, but the thing that really got me about him was that it was melody. It was really, really lovely melodies, really, if you broke them down, if you got through the scratches and all of that. Like, and if you play it at a certain tempo or change it, the beautiful gospel melodies. So
yeah, absolutely.
That was really sort of, that's how I learned to play this sort of thing. So that's really just how I stuck to it. And yeah, no, I really appreciate that. It's
Love it.
Are you fully fretboard confident? Do you know where the notes are, how they connect, and how they move up and down the strings? My latest book, The Triad Method, is all about using simple three-note shapes to completely unlock the fretboard. This book is absolutely full of light bulb moments that are going to demystify the neck three notes at a time. I've compiled a huge number of diagrams, shapes, and exercises based on over 10 years of teaching this stuff to make it as simple as possible. Download The Triad Method and see for yourself today. Link is in the description below.